Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
In 2026, London-based rock project Thirsty Choir Boys return with God Bless America, a striking release that celebrates the life, work, and unmistakable creative spirit of the late Guy Bailey, founder of the Choir Boys, songwriter, guitarist, and the architect of Thirsty's distinctive sound. Guy Bailey and Spike co-founded the Choir Boys, writing the songs that took the band from Monday night pub gigs to being managed by Sharon Osbourne and global tours with the Rolling Stones, Guns N' Roses, and Aerosmith, earning gold and platinum records along the way. Guy Bailey's solo project Thirsty began early in 2014 when he began working with Russian poet and lyricist Arena D. Between 2015 and 2018, they released three critically acclaimed albums, namely Thirsty, Albatross, and Nomad. More than a compilation, God Bless America is a rare and unexpected reunion, a posthumous collaboration between Guy Bailey and his longtime friend and musical partner Spike from the Choir Boys, reimagining Guy's songs through new vocals and powerful duets. Remixed and shaped under the ear of legendary Rolling Stones producer Chris Kimsey, the album brings new clarity, weight, and emotional depth to the music Bailey created with co-writer Arena D. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Spike and Chris from the Thirsty Choir Boys. Spike first, where are you and how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm all good, thank you.
All good.
You in the UK?
Yeah, we just got back from Madrid yesterday, me and Chris. And it was very, very, very hot. It was so hot that I burnt my hand on my mic stand.
Oh, my word. Chris, how are you doing? Are you in the UK as well?
I'm in North London, and I also came back from Madrid yesterday when we did a show with our Just Choir Boys hat on.
There was 10,000 people there. It was wonderful.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. But now, how did the original name of the Choir Boys, how was it chosen? And how did you choose Thirsty Choir Boys, Spike?
Well, the original name, it was going to be Choir Boys, C-H-O-I-R. You know, the original spelling. And then when, you know, we started the band when I was about 17 and we used to work on a building site together. And we used to basically go to work similarly dressed to what we do now, actually, at St. James' Army Barracks. And one day this Irish guy came up and he went, "I hear you're in a band." And he went, "Yeah." And we went, "Yeah. What's it? We might call it the Choir Boys." And he goes, "Well, with that bugger in the band, you should call it the bloody Queer Boys." We were actually called the Queer Boys. We went, "Oh, what a great name." Because we never thought we'd do anything. And we were the Queer Boys, well, Q-U-E-R-E-E-R, for a long, long time, including selling out nights at the Marquee and everywhere like that. And then the Dominion Theatre, those things. And then Lemmy from Motorhead said to us one night, he says, "Lads," he says, "you're never, ever going to get on Top of the Pops," which is one of the biggest shows in England. There was at the time. The name, like the Queer Boys. Guy was looking at this. We had a stencil on the guitar case. And Guy went, "Tell you what, just change the E to an R, you know, and change it around. And we can be the Choir Boys." So that's why it's spelled like that. So that's how it all came about, really. And Thirsty was the band that Guy Bailey had with Chris Johnson.
Yeah, sorry. So that one started about 2014. And it really started with Guy and the Russian poet Arena D, who had the lyrics. And they started together. They brought me into the bass and the keys. And Simon Hans from the Sweets do the drums. And it just came involved. It was a name that just came and just sort of fit together. This project that we're doing now was originally just the best of Thirsty. And it was a compilation because I don't know if you know, but Guy passed away nearly 3 years ago now. Same. And we wanted to do it as a tribute.
Yes.
But what happened was I asked Spike to come in and do one song, just because we nice jump from one, and it sounded so good that we asked him to do another and another. And then we came up with something. I'm trying to decide whether they're cover versions or remixes or what they are, but they're basically the same backing track with Spike doing the lead vocals. And then we realized it, what should we call it? Because it's true that it's Thirsty with Spike. But if you have Spike and Guy and me, I mean, we're three original members of the Choir Boys from the family year and all the EMI. So in actual fact, the Thirsty Choir Boys works for both. And of course, we're always quite a thirsty band.
You're so good at explaining stuff, Chris. I couldn't have explained it as good as that. But I have told the story about the Choir Boys name a million times. So, I know that you're in South Africa, and we've done really well in South Africa. Do you remember we were going to play there at one point, Chris? Do you remember?
We were at one point.
We were allowed at the time, were we, or something?
It
was a long time ago. Yeah.
Chris, moving to you, your story. So at what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be in this world of creativity? And how did that journey progress to meeting the band and the story?
Well, it actually all joined up with, because I actually went to school with Guy Bailey, and he was my friend from when I was 12. So we were both really into it. I mean, it really started when I heard T-Rex and I decided I wanted a guitar for Christmas, but that was a couple of years younger. And then I met Guy and he'd got a guitar and we just started playing in bands at school, which kind of went on, and we did some demos and we started off being a bit prog rock and then we were a bit new wave. Then I kind of went to university and Guy kind of didn't, although he was actually the brightest kid in school. He just couldn't be arsed. He was just a total rebel even back then. He moved to London and a couple of years later, he met Spike, who at that point had never sung. He had a Gibson Les Paul Jr. that his father had given him, which he could play, but nothing. And so Guy met Spike and I knew Guy. Guy and Spike went and did a rehearsal and they were going to be the new Rock and Roll Wham, just the two of them. No one else was going to be allowed. But I said, that won't do, because I wanted to be in the band. So after a bit of persuasion and a few beers, they let me join.
Hey, so Chris, did you go to Wham's last show at Wembley? You did, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I went up to the warm-up at Brixton Academy.
All right. Wham played at the Marquee Club one night. Done the video there.
Did a video for
Maybe I'm Your Man. Yeah. Yeah. When we were there.
Yeah.
I can't remember us wanting to be Rock and Roll Wham, by the way. But
that was Guy probably.
And then we ended up playing. What was the other guy in Wham? What's his name?
Andrew Ridgely.
We were on a TV show with him in Amsterdam. Weren't we? With Mark Almond and everybody, and then we ended up having a really good evening out together, you know. But it's just funny how things happen, isn't it? If you can tell, you see, I'm obviously a lot younger than Guy and Chris.
Spike, let's go into your story. At what age, as a child or teenager, did you discover this path, and how did that journey progress?
You know what? I mean, we've all had a charmed life, right? I mean, you know, I basically moved to London. I'm from Newcastle originally. I don't know if you've ever heard of Newcastle, but we've got the richest football team in the world now, okay? And then I moved to Newcastle just to get a job, basically, and I never, ever thought I'd end up in a rock band, you know? I never thought I'd be a singer. When I was a kid, and what we're trying to do now, we're trying to help schools now, and I'm doing a thing up in Newcastle, because when I was a kid, you used to be able to take an instrument home. You could have a guitar, violin, any instrument, and you'd take it home for a week to see if you enjoyed playing it. And I remember that they showed me three chords for a song. I think it was On Top of Old Smokey or something. And I played it to my dad and he was so impressed. He got me private guitar lessons. And then I got very influenced by Ralph McTell and Stephen Grossman, all these folk guys. And of course, and then my band was always the Rolling Stones. So that was the way that I got into it. And then when my dad came to London with my guitar, me and Guy sat and wrote some songs together. I mean, I didn't even know he was, you know, could play guitar or anything. It's just very bizarre. It's like sliding doors.
Yes.
You know, it's a very bizarre way how we got together. And then we, obviously, having a name like the Choir Boys, we never thought we were going to do anything. But look what happened in the end, you know? And I never thought I'd be the singer. I'd never, ever sang through a microphone before until we were in, was it Brixton, Chris, we were in, or was it somewhere else rehearsing?
I think we're in a school at Borough.
When we were rehearsing, was it not Brixton Community Centre? I think it was about 75 pence an hour. And Guy went, go on, well, we've done these songs. Why don't you? I said, I've never sung through a mic. And then it was like, you know. Baby, won't you marry me? Where the hell did that come from? I'd never done it before. And then he went, now you're the singer. And that's how it all came about, really. You're making us reminisce, miss.
That's good. So you guys have got this project with Thirsty Choir Boys, and you also still tour and perform as the Choir Boys, correct?
We've been, since I was 17, we've been doing the Choir Boys. You know, we were signed to EMI. Was it Polygram, Chris, or Phonogram, or what? What was it we were signing them?
Parlophone.
The same as the Beatles.
Yeah.
The Pet Shop Boys. Was it Phonogram? I can't remember. EMI, anyway. And, I mean, this band's been together a long time, you know, on and off.
The thirsty thing for this one, if you just wanted that one, this is really just a short-term thing, really just because of Guy, who was the total inspiration of the whole Choir Boys thing at the beginning, and the whole EMI thing, everything was all to do with him. Yeah, when we had this Thirsty project, and it was really, he wasn't going anywhere. But then once we got Spike on board, this whole, it's just become totally re-energized. And the Choir Boys is going the whole time as a band which tours. But Guy was never into that. He never wanted to tour again after he did it the first couple of times.
Okay.
He was never in the ongoing.
I mean, you have to remember that we, you know, from the age of 17, we spent how many years on tour? By the time we'd done the second album, we had stopped, had we, Chris, really? We'd been all over the world and never seen a thing apart from hotels and gigs.
And airports.
And airports.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. So oddly, the Thirsty Choir Boys thing, which has come together now, it's a development of the Thirsty thing that started in 2014 with just Guy.
Yes.
But now we've got Spike on board as well, and it's become a thing in its own right. And it was great music before, but what Spike has really brought to the table, he's really made the music go up to another level. And Guy's guitar sounds so sharp, the way that Chris Kimsey has remixed it with Spike, that the record is getting some great reviews, and he's kind of going along in parallel to the main band.
What you got to remember is that, when the Choir Boys had a break for about 5 or 6 years, I got offered a big deal to put the band back together, and everybody else had got other lives at that point. And Guy Bailey was like, "Darling, I shan't tread the boards anymore." So it was like, and then so I carried it on basically, and now we're still playing. Got a new lineup of the band, which Chris played in the other night. You know, so I'm keep playing, you know. And Thirsty was a side project for Guy because he knew that he didn't have to tour on it, really. And, Chris put it together, Chris Johnson, who was, you know, Chris put it together with Arena and Chris Kimsey, who produced the second Choir Boys album, you know, doing with the Rolling Stones and everybody like that. He's done amazing stuff. So this was like, you've got to realize that Guy Bailey was, you know, my Chris and my best friend. And then he passed away. So this was just such an honor for me to sing on songs. I thought I'd never hear his voice again. And it was such a wonderful thing to do. I was only supposed to do a couple or one or something.
Yeah. I was going to say, when I heard your voice on the first song, and look, it's against Guy's guitar, which I know so well from when we started. I think we were doing 10, 7 and possibly 6, and it was just all of us in the control listening to you singing. It was just electric, like your voice and his guitar.
I was trying to do it as a duet with Guy, and then I went, I said, "Lads, is there any chance I can just sing this properly about it?" You've got to realise that me and Guy wrote so many songs together, and everything that, you know, it was so easy for me to slip into that mode of the keys that he wrote in, everything like that, you know what I mean? So it was such a wonderful feeling to be able to do hear my best pals play the guitar brilliantly and hear his voice again. So it was just a wonderful thing for me.
And you did a fantastic job. I mean, the way each song you came in and you sang with a really good feel and slotted right in with the guitar as if he'd never been away. And it was
it was very strange because, as well, obviously, I mean, I didn't write the lyrics. It was Arena who wrote the lyrics, and the lyrics are, I mean, it is very similar to the Choir Boys, but the lyrics are a completely different thing to what we would have ever done. I think it gives people a lot more to think about than just drinking, women, cars and drugs. Is that right?
So you have to be in the right mood. It's a fairly straightforward way of putting it, So what's a big difference, I think, is that a lot of pop songs talk about feelings, whereas a lot of these stories talk about these songs are stories, so they're more narrative.
Yeah.
It's not an exclusive thing, but if you wanted to say what's different between Thirsty and the average pop song, it's not so much about, you know, lyrical, how I feel this way. They have a story behind them that you can listen to.
And I think a lot of people have really, on reviews, and a lot of people I've spoken to who said the album actually love the whole fact that it's about certain things that, you know, that not many people would have realized the songs were about, which I think is wonderful.
A lot of people listen to music and they enjoy it, but they don't necessarily hear the lyrics or the story or the intention behind it. Mm. Now, when you guys write or when you create, obviously you are very intentional what you're writing about. Do you want your listening audience to get it straight away, or are you comfortable in allowing them to process it at their own time?
I have got hundreds of songs published, you know, for the choir boys and everything like that. I remember doing an interview once, and I was explaining a song to somebody in an interview. And then I remember, and they were like really upset because they didn't realize that song, what I'd written it about, because they had their feeling of who that song was for. And when I told them exactly who it was, actually a song about my sister, and they thought it was about their husband or wife or something like that, you know. So I think it's always best just to leave it to everybody's imagination, and then they can find out what the song is about, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because I think if it's not a good song, it won't help you if the words have got a story. But if it is a good song, which should stand on its own things, and these are great songs. They're like classic. Guy always loved songs that are 2 minutes long. We always said it has to be like something on Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers' first album, 2 minutes, a really good song put together, really well formed with strong lyrics. But then on top of that, I mean, the lyrics do have, they're beautifully put together. And they, in many cases, they were written first, so that Irina would come with a poem based on a story. It might be Donnie Brasco, which is the story of the FBI infiltrator of the mobster who then betrays him, or God Bless America, which is the story of JFK's sister who was lobotomized by her father, and it's a true story. And obviously it helps to know that. But I would also say that God Bless America is a great song, and even if you didn't know the story, you should like it, and I think you would.
Yeah. I mean, do you know what? There's a prime example of this. I remember when I met Prince, right? I was looking at it. It's a very bizarre evening, but I did meet him. You know, Nothing Compares to You, that song.
Yes.
What would you think that song was about?
Actually, thinking about it now, it's a song to oneself, comparing themselves to a better version of themselves.
Do you know what the song's about?
No, tell me.
Him giving up cigarettes.
Oh, really?
Isn't that incredible?
That's why he's counting the minutes, actually. It's been 17 hours and 16 days. That's what you do when you're packing and smoking,
My love away. It's genius, isn't it?
Oh, wow.
I've written a song about drinking, but I'm not going to do that yet until because that means I'll have to stop forever and ever.
You can start. It's been 10 minutes.
Yes. But I thought that was so interesting. You see, we have had a charmed life. The amount of people that we've met, and you know, the places we've played, you know, and we played with some of the greats like Bowie, the Stones. I mean, we've played with everybody, you know, and it's been, you know, such a great time. So, but I think it's when you do, everybody's got a different interpretation of a song. The thing is, I mean, with the choir boys, it's pretty obvious what we're singing about the majority of the time, but Thirsty do a twist on it, you know what I mean? Which I think was wonderful.
Chris, what do you enjoy about performing live?
What I enjoy about it is...
Night, you mean?
Yeah. Well, no, I enjoy it. I mean, it's actually now. You're playing to a real audience that's there, and they're actually listening to it, enjoying getting off on it. So it's totally different from if you're in a studio and you're putting something else together in detail and trying to find the exact right part and trying to do that. When we're playing the band, I mean, there's five of us together, and we're just trying to create a really good groove and a really good atmosphere and trying to really get the audience going. And when you're doing it together at the same time, you're not like sitting down, putting a bass down to a drum track. We're all like playing together and hoping. Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you say, Spike? I mean, and when it, like in a few songs, when it really clicks, it's really, really good.
It's wonderful. And I mean, you know, I mean, when we were playing together the other night, I mean, I was looking at you, and it took me back so many years. I mean, well, what a great time, wasn't it?
I sent you when I sent you a message this morning. The same thing.
I know. Amazing. And how many people? I mean, you think of all the countries in the world that will be playing. Everybody knows the songs that we wrote in a bloody living room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Singing it back to you. It's incredible.
So, Spike, as you've mentioned, you've been in the industry creating, performing for a number of years. What keeps motivating you to keep getting back on stage and perform?
Well, you know what? I think that if you meet people like the Stones or Rod Stewart or anybody like that, everybody comes from a really strong work ethic, you know? And if it doesn't matter how much money you've got, you know, we've all been down that road. What did we do? Do we retire? What do we do when we retire? What are we going to do? Certainly can't play golf, but even though I tried. But you've got to have a goal to do something and to keep going, because it's, you know, I mean, do you think that Rod Stewart needs to play all this time or the Rolling Stones? No, because you've got to keep going, because if you don't, you might as well. It's very easy. It's certainly very, very easy just to lie in bed and feel sorry for yourself with millions in the bank and going, oh my God, I feel terrible. But it's like, you've got to have that get up and go to go, right, this, you know, I'm paying the people back for what they give us, and let's keep on playing. You know, it's like the Stones and Rod and everything. They're breaking new ground. They really are. I mean, there's nobody been that, you know, in their 80s playing rock and roll. And I mean, it's just incredible that they're still doing it. And, you know, I'm sure they could just retire and not do anything, but they've got a work ethic to keep going. You know, and it's not really a job what we do, you know, it's just great fun. Plus, you get to see all your mates again. You get to see who's still alive, because everybody's dying. Everybody's dying around with Chris. But, you know, and it's just like the major thing is there's still me, Nigel, Rudy, and Chris from the Choir Boys alive. And we wanted to keep it going, you know, and that's what we're doing, basically.
Chris, anything to add?
Just one thing. I just really would like to give Spike credit, because he's not just talking a game here. I mean, he's been going through great times, tougher times. He's gone to times when his own band have thrown him out. He's put the band back together. I mean, he has such an energy and a commitment and a love for what he's doing. I mean, he's a truly great thing, what he does to keep it going. And it's something I respect hugely. I mean, I just come back to know a few shows, because the normal guy can't do it. I'm not really a full-time person, although I absolutely love doing it and I want to do some more. But if Spike is the one who keeps it going, he's the heart and soul of the band. And he gets a lot of credit from me for that.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's a thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the booklets, the unpacking, listening to song from one to whatever number. I am unsure if you are or not aware, massive uptick of physical around the world. I was reading in Variety a couple of weeks ago that last year in the US, $1.04 billion was spent on vinyls in the US last year, the biggest since 1983. 5.9 million vinyls sold in the UK a couple of years ago, the biggest since 1993. Last year, also in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on the number, which has to be a high number every day, they monitor it for tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are back in the basket. The research is showing that it's the teenagers diving into the physical world. Then we have Spotify and the streaming. What are your guys' observation of the landscape at the moment?
Well, I know for a fact, we sell more vinyl now than CDs. The last Choir Boys album, Motor Street, came out on cassette, vinyl, CD. And believe it or not, we were the first band, right, since 1986 or 7, to release it on 8-track. And we've done that for people with vintage cars, you know. We're actually doing a thing with this Classic Car magazine. So we were the first band to release it on 8-track again. I mean, I feel sorry for young bands now. I totally disagree with Spotify. I really do. I don't think it does any good for anybody. Young bands now have such a hard time. the music business completely changed when the record companies started taking the publishing, the merchandise, the, you know, because of the shows. I mean, how can these young bands play? That's why I'm going to start this thing in Camden. And so I'm doing a thing where I'm getting young musicians down to the Barfly in Camden. I'm going to do one show a month and have young musicians get up and play with me. And I'm going to have a house band, different friends of mine, so they can come and play the violin if they want. They can come and play the saxophone, or a young band and get up and sing with me. We were probably one of the last bands that were in the back of a transit van for like 5-6 years. It's like your apprenticeship. Because for a start, there's not enough places for young bands to play. In our days, you used to have the universities. You had all the little club, and everywhere's dying off. And it's such a crime and such a shame, because, you know, if anybody goes to a gig and, you know, the young band's got a CD, you don't even have CD players in the cars anymore. I understand how young bands are doing it, giving it away free. I mean, we still give away, you know, maybe the singles or stuff like that, but I totally disagree with putting everything out there for free, or at least give it 3 months, then put it out there free, because the band has to make a living. Mm-hmm. The choir boys and stuff, it's a medium-sized business when you look into it. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of people work for us. There's a lot of things going on, and you've got to pay people, and you don't just get that from record sales anymore. But luckily, our band is from the days when so many people met at our shows, and I've got kids from our shows, and their kids come to see us, and it's building it back up again, you know? And I think that's a really nice thing. And everybody knows if you buy T-shirts, going to help, and everything like that. So it's just really upsetting that the music industry was destroyed. It's going to happen in the movie business soon, because you've got AI. You're going to have actors on the screen, and the one up, you know, you'll have Marilyn Monroe with Tony Curtis soon in a movie. You know what I mean? It's going to be the same thing. But you've got to try and keep it alive. And one thing that we're doing is trying to keep rock and roll alive.
Chris, anything to add?
I think what Spike said is absolutely beautifully put. My only other comment on that, and it's a kind of an extension away from the CDs. The other thing which is really makes it really hard for smaller bands is that there's this huge stadium-sized gig cult going around, and everyone has to spend £250 to get a ticket to see whether it's Taylor Swift or Jay-Z, whoever it is, or you can have platinum or super platinum or VIP, and they're just hoovers for just sucking up huge amounts of everyone's money and selling them what they think is this beautiful experience. But it's obviously a really closed thing. Hardly anyone can get in onto that bus. And that's where the industry is really at now. And that's another reason why Spike is running. It's really, really hard for anyone to get going. So how do you get up there if you're not Taylor Swift? I mean, it's virtually impossible, because they all close it down for themselves.
If you look at the rock scene from when we started with Guns N' Roses and all about, how many British rock and roll bands were around those? There's hundreds and hundreds. It's nothing's the same anymore. I mean, when we were kids, you had the Mods, you had, we used to call them, we were Hairies or Rockers and different things like that. There's nothing like that now. And then even where all these multi-millionaire bands are still charging £1,500 to meet them after the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how much money does people need? Yeah. I think, well, anyway. But we're not from that culture, really, I don't think.
Chris, first, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
Go and buy our album. It's truly wonderful. And the more you listen to it, the more you'll like it.
Buy the vinyl. Yeah. Buy the CD. Right?
Yeah.
Buy the cassette.
Buy the T-shirt.
It'll be posted to you very specially. And buy a T-shirt. And you know what? Please, everybody, keep rock and roll alive with the Choir Boys and Thirsty. Come on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.